pleased to be joined by someone who's going to tell us all about the prospects and exactly where they're going. Dan Marr, the director of NHL Central Scouting, a longtime NHL employee, a longtime NHL friend and friend of this broadcast. If you could characterize, to I think a casual observer, if you could characterize this draft, I think most people look at it and say it's the year of the Finns and the year of the Americans. Agree or disagree?
Well, I would phrase it that it's just the state of the game of hockey, because in all circles the players are coming from everywhere now. Canada still develops a lot of good hockey players. United States has improved the program. Finland and Sweden, about a decade ago, they went back and just re-examined their development models, and we're seeing the byproduct of that work now that it's coming forward. But it's just, there's just a depth of talent available on a worldwide basis now.
If you can pause on the Finnish model, but we know what the Swedes did when their program through the 90s was challenged, let's just say. We know how they went back in the premium on skill, less structured games, more creativity. What did the Finns do?
Well, they kind of followed a similar format where they've kept it regionalized. So players aren't traveling all over the place. The players are playing less games, and they're spending more time on skills and development.
Right.
And they also focus more on all the off-ice development with the players.
Looking at it, do you scout differently when you scout it for a team and you scout for Central Scouting?
The job description is the same, but the philosophy is entirely different. At Central Scouting, we're tasked to look at what the player does well, what he brings to the table, what he would bring to an NHL club, and then put him in a range on our list where we think the NHL team should consider them. We're not required to do the in-depth interviews and to factor in a lot. And it's basically a little bit of an oversimplification, but sometimes that's a good thing, because there is a tendency where you can really complicate the process if you delve too deep.
The average thing about when is the green light, red light for a scout to say to the general manager, we really got to be aggressive about moving up? Like, I mean, that thing versus the guy who cries wolf all the time versus the guy who sits back and every now and then, wow, we got to really make a move.
Well, you're always pushing your general manager to get you more picks, and then when it comes time to make the move, a lot of the time it's if you don't think the player that you're focused on is going to be available at that time, you will make your push to move up, but that's hard to do. Most oftentimes, if the player you want, you might be available a couple of picks later, then you would tell the GM, well, if you want, you can move down, pick up an extra pick for us or a player for your roster. So it kind of works that way, but it all happens in the moment on the draft floor. You can have scenarios in play, but until the teams ahead of you make their selections, you really don't know what's going to happen.
Did you still sometimes feel that GMs, I mean, they're calling you at the 11th hour going, why is this guy ranked ahead of this guy? Kind of, they're second-guessing themselves. Like, do you feel like you have to put their mind at ease sometimes? And how often do you get those calls leading up to the draft? And like, even during the draft, does it happen all the time?
Well, most times, those conversations take place in person when you run into them at a game. And draft week here, there's very little talk about the players until you're actually on the draft floor. And then, especially at the start of the second day, when there's different players available. But most times, those talks are initiated by the scouting director. But the GMs are always doing their due diligence there, and they'll check and just see, you know, you guys had this guy here, or what do you think about this player here? But most often, we tell them that he should listen to the team scouts.
You know, it has to be, and we're speaking with Dan Marr, director of NHL Central Scouting, has to be challenging as well, sort of contextualizing a lot of the players in North America who play in a lot of different leagues, whether it's playing with the development program, USHL, the CHL, or in the case of, you know, three specific players, two defensemen and a center, the BCHL. Jose, I think, is fantastic. I think we're all on the same page about that wonderful U18 tournament, loved by his teammate Santé Fabbro, who's off to BU, I believe, committed there. Dennis Cholowski, who was a sort of late addition, right around the CHL top prospects game. We started to hear a lot about the defenseman, and is just now entering the Hockey Canada program. When you slot these players, how do you do it considering the leagues, by way of talent, by way of quality, vary so much around North America?
A lot of that, it's hard to they come up with a blueprint for it. A lot of it's based on experience and experience with your staff, experience with that league. But with Jost and Fabro, these are players that we have a really good history with. They've been in the Hockey Canada development program, and so we have reports on them from U16, U17, U18, and with their club team. And both of them, every event, every tournament, and most of the games that you go to, they're impact players. And like when you're talking at this level, like good players are good players, it doesn't matter where. So it was an easy projection for us to say if they would have been playing in NCAA this year or playing in the CHL, then we'd have been seeing the same product on the ice. Chylewski was a little different because he grew so much this year, and his game started to climb, and we included him in the CJHL Top Prospects game, and just that ascent for him, he just wowed everybody that went to see him. But he impacted in the league games first, and that's what draws your attention to him.
Interesting, well, correct me if I'm wrong, when he was drafted in the Western League in the Bantam draft, he was 5'3", 120 pounds. Wow. He was a squirt.
Yes. And now you know, he needs some time to fill out.
Yeah.
We saw that at the combine testing, but at 17 going on 18, you do need that time to fill out. But it's his hockey sense and his skill sense and just the way he approaches the game. The scouts, like from January on, they were just in awe of him when they went to watch him.
He's off to St. Cloud, we should mention. Go ahead,
Corey. So you know, some 31 years ago when Wendell Clark was drafted, Dan Marr was at the Leaf draft table. And he was helping me make sure we pulled the right sweater out front of the table because the TV cameras were right over.
Yeah.
And we had Clark, Simpson, Merzen, Sanlak, all these jerseys.
Oh, you had all four?
Had them all, right?
So, but you're picking one. You know who you're taking, guys.
Apparently not. Anyway, but we did, but, you know, you got the safeguard. So he was helping out with that. And you knew a kid from Saskatchewan or any of those places about being players. I mean, Austin Matthews, how many times have you run into this about a guy being picked that high? And he's a guy that you got hockey parents everywhere that are forcing the kids in when they're 3 years old and whatever, and why aren't they playing here, there, and everywhere. A guy that just fell in love with the game himself, asked his parents to play in a non-traditional hockey market, and becomes a top prospect.
Well, he is an exceptional young man, and he's just driven and motivated, and that goes for anything. But he's big into baseball as well. Mm-hmm. He went to the
taking some cuts the other day.
He went to the Bison games here Tuesday night. Nobody knew him. Sat there, watched the game. Just and he enjoys baseball. But the way he handles himself, his support group, the way they've kind of groomed him and brought him along, it's just a testament to him and his family and his character.
Can I ask you where, in your estimation, he would have fallen in last year's draft? Some chatter that he could have rivaled Eichel for number two, only missed a draft by a couple of days by way of birthday.
No, he was in that mix.
Wow. Yeah.
He was in that mix. Top two, top three.
Stan, my question to you is this. I mean, okay, the first round is the pinnacle for the NHL. I mean, it's the show. Everyone wants to see the top guys. But then you're in charge of putting up this big list, seven rounds of players. How difficult is it to basically, from rounds three to round seven, to really, you know, it seems like sometimes you're splitting hairs to put a guy here and there. Like, is that probably the most difficult part of your job, is between rounds three and seven?
It is, and it's one where we go over it and over it and over it. We put it together, then we let it sit for a while. We come back, we attack it again, and then we actually go around the room and we let everybody from each region say, you know, do we have your guys in the right spot? But then most oftentimes what happens, and, you know, it's a very respectful way that we approach our list, is that the Western guy will say, I know this Quebec League player is better than my guy, so he should be ahead. He should be ahead of my guy. And this is where the crossover scouting really is important to all the scouting staffs. But what I find, it's similar when you're at the draft table. When you get down to the sixth and seventh round, at the draft, you know, the scouts, are the regional guys in particular, they know that, you know, there's only one pick left, and the guy I want is still
there. They
want their guy. They start pushing for it. But even putting the list together, now you're coming down into the seventh round, so we're going to run out of names. Guys still have names in their back pocket that they're pushing to get on the list.
Dan, only have a couple of moments. Want to ask your thoughts on goaltenders. Only one win in the first round last year, Washington picking up Ilya Samsonov. Do we see any goaltenders selected in the first round tonight? Whether it's Philip Gustafson, Carter Hart, take your pick, Tyler Parsons, go right down the list, Evan Fitzpatrick.
Well, as you know, it's just a projection, and it could or couldn't happen. But again, you go back over the last decade, it's been less than one goaltender taken in the first round. And right now, this year, because it's such a hard position to assess when they're 17 and 18. I'd be surprised, but I would think, you know, if anyone had the chance, it might be Gustafson.
He's, from everyone that I've spoken to, he seems to have the most solid fundamentals and doesn't need that level of development. Like, the fundamentals are there.
Yeah, technically sound goaltender, and he's been consistent, and that's, you know, very important when it comes to goaltending.
What do you expect tonight? I mean, do you expect there to be... It's just personal opinion. We keep hearing about trades, and P.K. Subban's been a big story the last 24 hours, and what's Edmonton going to do with four? Is Vancouver going to try to jump up? What is Winnipeg doing with number two? In under 60 seconds, what do you expect tonight, Dan Maher? You've been to plenty of these.
It's always interesting. It's very intriguing, and this is why I think where the interest is generated for the fans, because there's 30 philosophies in play here. And everyone has a different philosophy. We have players in the first round, teams will have in the second, vice versa. So the top two or three picks should be pretty solid. Mm-hmm. But after that, it's going to be all over the map. And not because the teams don't know what they're doing, just everyone has a different focus in their philosophy of what they want to bring into their organization. And that's how they've crafted their lists.